Theo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, but nobody cares about me. People care about the guests, and the guests in this case is awesome. He is from a band that we've loved for a long time. He's also played with UFO, he's played with Sebastian Bach, but Spread Eagle is the main band and the reason that we are talking to him today. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob DeLuca. Rob, how are you?
Good. It's great to be here. And of course, people care about you, Brett. Don't sell yourself short.
Well, I'm just the mouthpiece to get to the real information, and you're the one who's giving out the real information, because Spread Eagle has a new album coming out August 9th from Frontiers. That one's called Subway to the Stars.
Yeah, and we appreciate you taking time to talk to us about it, Brett. Yeah, we're very excited for this new record. Obviously, it's been many, many years since we've released new music. And we obviously took our time and made sure it's the right record for our fans. You don't wait 26 years or whatever to put out a shitty record. So, yeah, we totally stand behind it, and we're very, very proud of it and very excited.
Well, I know that, yeah, I mean, I got so many questions already, but I know that it's, you know, like so many things have changed. I mean, you've got like half of the band is different than it was from 26 years ago. But I mean, Ray's voice has really adapted a lot over the years. I know, like, I've heard his stuff with Weapons of Anu as well. So I know, you know, like his sound is different, but there's no question that a lot of the themes and certainly the song titles from the new album, like, fit right into the old stuff.
Well, yeah, there's definitely the connection to the songwriting on the old albums, because Ray and I were a big part of that. And I think Ray's voice has grown. I know he didn't want to just be that guy who only screamed, and we respected that when we were writing for this record. But of course, he still does do, you know, a bunch of screaming. But he didn't want to be just that. You know, he wanted to branch out a little more, being all, you know, all these years later and all his new experiences and new talents, you know, vocal talents. So we took that into consideration, and I think it worked to our advantage.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that you can do, because that was the thing about Spread Eagle before, is that you were never a pop metal band. You always had that real hard edge to begin with. So I think that kind of gave you more room to give this kind of music to the fans, because I think if you were like Bon Jovi and you had that poppy sound, it would be very hard to kind of go this heavier way. But you were already close to that.
Right. And also, you know, that can work as an advantage. What you're explaining could work as an advantage or a disadvantage. You know, I mean, our fans loved it, but it definitely made us, you know, not mainstream, not as mainstream as let's say, you know, Bon Jovi or someone else. So, you know, it's a tough road, but if that's who you are, you have to be who you are. And I can definitely say when we came out with that original sound, that's who we were, and I can definitely say where we are now is really who we are, and we're exactly where we're at.
And I think that, you know, it's so important to be who you are throughout, because I know we've talked to a lot of musicians, and I think that the more that you try to push yourself out of that and become something else, you're going to be miserable later on.
Yeah, you know, it's okay to change. It's certainly okay to grow, but you have to respect your fans. You know, if you change, you should maybe consider it, you know, your record being a solo record or a name of a different band, you know, name it a different band or something. But if you grow and you're still that same person you were, then your fans are going to be happy and you're going to still be true to yourself. I think in the end, you should be true to yourself though, because you'll be miserable and your music won't be as good as it would be as if it was genuine, you know. Chasing trends or styles or having preconceptions, you know, that's just going to paint you into a corner.
Yeah, because you've got to put out the music that you're passionate about, because the second that you stop being passionate about the music, then I mean, the fans are going to know.
Yeah, And if you've changed, like I said, it's okay to grow and it's okay to change. But if you've totally changed, whereas your fans won't accept you, then what's the point, you know? And luckily, we're still those people we were back in 1990. We're just better versions of it, you know?
Yeah, because I mean, there's no question. I remember I had the Spread Eagle cassette back in 1990, and it is still one of my favorite albums from that 1990 era. Like
Oh,
I'll
thank you.
listen to it all the time. And
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was a moment in time, and we weren't faking it, that's for sure.
yeah.
So it's I look back on it very, very proudly. Absolutely.
So then. How, in this case, I know that you wanted to go when you were recording this new album, you wanted to kind of go back even before the recording of the first album and to really just kind of make the songs like that. So how was that process?
Well, I think, you know, the mood depends on the day for songwriting. And when I do remember before songs that didn't make our first album, they were really, really punky. So with something like Subway to the Stars, the main riff that the album starts off with, the title song, you know, I was thinking like that, like it's I want it really punky, you know, and I think we achieved it, but I obviously every song isn't like that, and I didn't want every song to be like that. But I wanted, you know, I wanted to have the important elements that our fans love and that I love, you know, and that punkiness that was there at the absolute inception of the band. I wanted to include some of that, and we did.
Well, there's no doubt, I don't know how to quantify it per se, but like there is a New York sound, especially at that street metal sound, and I know that one of your shirts has that street metal on it, but it's like, because when I've listened to like New York and the hardcore scene and stuff like that, I know that grittiness is absolutely there, and I do think that this does a good job of bringing that in, but as you say, they're not all songs like that. I mean, you have Subway to the Stars, but you have Sound of Speed, which is, you know, different. Little Serpentina, you know, back even down to the end track, which is Solitaire. And I mean, they're great stuff. And so you're going all over the place with the album, which is good.
Well, I don't know if it's I would, you know, I'm really close to it, so I, you know, your view of it is very valid. To me, it doesn't sound like all over the place. I think we're just, you know, trying to write great songs and kick ass. But New York definitely gets in your bones. I mean, especially if you've been here as long as we have. You know, there's something about New York that's to me, it's the most special city in the world, and I still think it's still my favorite city all these years later. And so, there's something inescapable about the city that, if you're making any kind of art, it's gonna translate, and that's good. You know, you should be proud of where you come from and represent, you know, where you come from. And so, we're trying to bring a little bit of New York City to the world, you know, to the stars.
Yeah, I guess I'll clarify that a little bit. When I say all over the place, I mean all over the place within a Spread Eagle framework, not so much all over the place with different musical styles. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think our second record is, I think, is a really artistic, beautiful album. But for me, that got a little too stretched out, and so I wanted to real pull that back in. There's songs on the second record that I really identify with, but there's some that I don't identify with as much as the first album. So I thought it's important to not, you know, to not be too all over the road, you know. But you have to show some diversity, of course. You don't want to bore people, and you want to show them your talents, you know, and different moods are definitely different, showing, you know, you're not a one-dimensional person or a one-dimensional writer.
Yeah, because the first album there's it is extremely consistent, you know, from start to
Yeah.
finish. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, we wanted it to be one thing and the most aggressive version of that, you know.
Well, and I know as I've talked about with a lot of artists again, where that first album is always is always almost always the most dangerous because like you've spent so long kind of for readying your sound and you are at your most hungry at that point when you've just gotten the record deal and you're just putting out that first album. So, you know, it's like you want to put your best out there. And so that's where, you know, that really feels like the first Spread Eagle album, right?
The first Spread Eagle album does feel like that, but that's, I don't know if I agree with what you're saying. That's usually the case. But I feel I'm just as hungry now. And that was not like, oh, you have all these years to write your debut and then you have a few months to write your second. In our case, we got signed. We moved from Boston to New York. And we got signed. We wrote some songs, made a demo, booked some gigs, and our manager asked some labels to come down and see us rehearsing for our first gig and our gigs. We had a few booked, and we started getting offers. So we canceled the gigs. We went right in the studio. This story is online, but it's 100% true. We went right in the studio and started recording. So we had very little time to record our first album. So we're an exception to that very typical story that you're telling, which is, you know, it is typical. That's the case with most bands. We wrote our first record very quickly. We as I said, we had 3 months before we got signed, and then we went right in the studio and we're writing in the studio. So we're, you know, we're like an oddball band in that regard. We did it different from other bands. And, you know, people can say, well, you know, you didn't even do gigs, you know, you're like lucky or whatever. But we have been in bands for years trying. We had never gotten a record deal, and we were trying every which way to get a record deal, you know. And then we just kind of found ourselves when we put Spread Eagle together, that was the right combination. Those were the four people, and it was just like, you know, combustible at that point, and it took off really quickly.
Yeah, because it's so important to have the right chemistry when you're in a band. And now that's an interesting question because you've got two new members, you know, new as of I guess 2010, 2012. How has the band changed with them in it?
Well, Rick. Cousin Rick DeLuca is an amazing drummer, and just he's an all-around great musician. He brought in the music to the song 29th of February, which is one of my favorite songs on the record. And so, you know, he's really talented. He plays guitar, he plays bass, he sings, you know. So he's a total musician, so it's great to have him around and bounce a lot of ideas off him. You know, he and I did, when we started the process of this record, we started with just rhythm section rehearsals, just drums and bass. And we did like about 15 or 20 rehearsals, just the two of us. And that was a very, very important time for this record of incubation, where we could just, you know, everything from tempos to feels to no, let's change this kind of arrangement here. What else could I do, or what else could you do? You know, just no, that's not working. Let's go about it in a different, completely different way, you know. So we did so much work, and he, you know, as I said, he's so musical and he's great to work with. So that was fantastic. Ziv Shalev, our new guitar player, is definitely naturally in the style of Paul Di Bartolo. He's like half technique, half dirt, you know, half shred, half street, you know. So however you want to categorize it. So working with him is, you know, very natural for me. Just get in a room and let him riff, you know, whether he's writing or arranging, it's basically the same thing. Just go into a zone and start riffing out, you know, and after a couple minutes, something really amazing pours out. Something, you know, often something right away really amazing pours out. A lot of the ideas, a lot of the arrangement ideas were first thing he came up with. And I would guess his songwriting is similar. He's just a very kind of like, if I feel it, it's good, you know, kind of guy. So working with him is fantastic, and he's incredible. His soloing is just mind blowing. So those are the two new members, and we all get along really, really well. So it's a lot of fun making music with these guys. And Ray's a true friend too. So Ray's not just, you know, a business partner. Ray and I are true friends, and have been, you know, for many, many years. I'm very close with him now. Back in the day, I always got along with him fine, but we're much closer now. Not just because of the time, just because of who we've become as people, you know. And so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I like hearing that because it's always so, you know, it's interesting to hear the how bands evolve, and the fact that you've become like even closer friends, I think is really awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. And again, it's not because the time we've, you know, the time lapse. It's because just like we're focused on similar things at this point in our life, you know, and making great art is one of them, and being great people is another, you know.
Now, so The Sound of Speed is the first single, and you did a video for that one, which is a lot of fun, I gotta say. I like the video with the go-karts. That's got some silliness to it. But yeah, you can definitely see Ziv in there with the guitar soloing. I mean, definitely like shredding
Oh
on
yeah.
that.
Yeah. That was a blast making that video. We you know, the obvious place to go, Sound of Speed, is get all that stock car racing, stock car racing, you know, film, you know, that off of sites where you can download free videos and put car crashes and fire and all that, and you know, and so I made sure that's exactly where we would not go with the video, you know. And I thought it would be just hilarious if we're just in go-karts and taking it way too seriously. And I actually think I had the idea, to be honest, for years. This was the perfect song to use it on. But I think the idea actually comes from in 1990, Ray and I, at least the two of us, maybe all four of us, went to a go-kart track in Florida on an off day, and someone took a bunch of pictures of it. So I have pictures of that I've looked at, you know, occasionally over the years, and it's always just stuck in my head of us racing go-karts, you know. And so I thought it would be hilarious to just take it way too seriously, like and that track was just perfect, like the sign, look, something like, look, mom, you know, it's look,
Oh,
mom, I'm
yeah.
driving a car or something, you know. It's just hilarious, you know. And so we had a blast. It was really, obviously you can tell that that's an easy video to have a lot of fun on and not have to fake it. And the director was a dear friend of ours named Phil Olako, and Phil has been our friend for since the beginning of the band, and he was the guitar player in the band Law and Order back
Oh,
then.
okay. I
So we
know
were
them. Yep.
label mates, and he also played in a band called Dogma, where he played guitar and sung. So we were label mates, and friends since then. And he doesn't play music anymore professionally. He's gone on to become a very successful director. So it was great doing it with him because he knew how to portray us in a natural way that he knew we would appreciate, because he knows us so well, you know. And he also comes from music, so yeah, it was fun. It's a great video, and we're really proud of it. So check it out. Check it out.
Oh,
Sound of Speed.
absolutely. It is a lot of fun. Now, with Frontiers, being on Frontiers, I mean, I get you've been on since 2018, and this is the first album. Now, is there going to be more videos released? You know, how are you happy with Frontiers so far?
Yeah, I mean, we today's like the first day, to be honest with you. I mean, in some ways, you know, we're just starting press. But I'm very happy to be on a label that's a rock label. You know, no matter what happens, we were on MCA, which was part of Universal, and MCA was a like a, I guess it was like a soul pop label, you know, dance music and different stuff, and they just decided to get into rock. I mean, they had rock bands too, don't get me wrong, but at the time when we signed to them, they didn't have much heavy rock at all. And so they were just had hired a whole new staff and were going for this sound that was all over the radio, which was, you know, Guns N' Roses and, you know, Skid Row and bands like that, you know? So we were one of their first signings. And, but they were just learning with, you know, we felt like we were a guinea pig in some ways with, you know, it was a lot of bands who were hard rock bands who got signed, and only a couple of them, or maybe even just one of them, that was getting attention. So I'm really happy to be on a label where there is no dance music, there is no rap music, there is no pop music. It's a rock label. It's a rock metal label. And, you know, it's different kinds of rock, you know, 80s metal, you know, hard rock. And that's great. So I know that they get us. And I know every label says that, and every band putting out a record says that, but it's obvious with their track record. They just put out Whitesnake, you know?
Yeah.
So they know where we're coming from. They know where we're going to. They know our history. So, yeah, I'm very excited to be on Frontiers, and I'm looking forward to the relationship, you know, and it's pretty much just starting. So I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, that's great. How about the touring? Like, what do you think? Because I know that both of you, of course, are involved. Both you and Ray are involved with other acts. So, you know, what does the touring schedule look like in this case?
Well, we obviously have to you know, be very creative and arrange that around our day gigs. And you know, my day gigs are obviously touring, playing bass. So we might do some stuff in August locally, but I would say the main Subway to the Stars tour will start in the fall, and it will continue into next year. And it will probably be, you know, different legs, not just solid. And we want to play everywhere. We're like, we didn't put this together to just, like, you know, arrange these musicians and put out a record, you know, and you know, like a lot of bands do that, even on Frontiers and other labels. And I respect that, but that's 100% opposite of what we're doing. We want to establish the band again as a recording touring band and never stop. And, you know, we stopped for 10, 12 years, and we're not going to do that again.
Yeah. Well, and it must be nice to know at least that you've got that what you built up over those two albums is still able in some way to kind of pay off for you, even after like 20 plus years in this case, of being able to make a new album and know that there's still fans out there that are ready to hear more Spread Eagle.
Well, yeah, it's paying off fan wise. Absolutely. They're reacting strong to the two singles. They're making it clear they want new music from us. They're watching the old videos. Our Switchblade Serenade video just hit 300,000 plays. And that's just because we're just starting to come out again. Now it's going to, you know, it'll double, you know. But that's a lot of plays. And that is a good payoff of knowing that the fans believe in what you did and where you're going. It's an incredible payoff. And we're very fortunate, and that's why when we made this record, we knew it was for our fans. We didn't want to come out with a completely different sound, you know. Like, that's who we were, and it's still who we are, you know. So we knew our fans would appreciate that also.
Well, I certainly, you know, I would love it if you were able to come near Calgary. It would be great to see you live as Spread Eagle. I mean,
yeah,
because we've certainly never had the chance to see you yet, and that's unfortunate. But because I'd love to see the live show.
Yeah, it's a great live band. I mean, I've never ever been in a band that used backing tracks. I don't even know how to go about it. You know, I see every band I play with, practically not play in but play with, set up, you know, a nice Macintosh and run all these lines to it and all this stuff, and everyone has these, you know, in-ears that are hooked to this system. And, you know, I understand the concept. I'm not stupid, but I don't even know how to do it. And I never will. So it's, you know, we are the true spirit of Spread Eagle. You know, it's just a band kicking ass on stage, trying to be as aggressive as possible and still play our instruments well and still play the songs well and sing well, you know? So it's always great to see a band like that, you know, because it's becoming extinct, you know. That's, new bands don't learn that way, you know, because it's not the trend. The trend is to run as many tracks as possible to make it sound as big as possible live. But I understand that, but I don't like it, because that's, you know, you fine tune everything when you make your record, when you record your record. But when you get out there live, it's a different animal, and you shouldn't look at it like that. That's kind of looking at it at the same way. Well, we, you know, we have all this stuff on our record, and then we'll go out live and we'll run all these tracks of all these, you know, different, you know, rhythm guitars and backing vocals and these synthesizer pads underneath, and, you know, but that isn't the way live should be approached. You know, if you want to do that on your record, that's fine, but live should be just an experience of the members of the band performing. And I think you will enjoy it, you know, because that's the essence of what we're putting forward.
Well, and you know, one of the things about that is that I think, as a fan, I'm certainly forgiving of an artist, you know, screwing up in some way, like missing a note, forgetting lyrics. I mean, on the one show that we saw you on, where you, with Sebastian Bach opening for, you know, the Chinese Democracy, Guns N' Roses, I mean, Axl forgot the words to one of the songs. That didn't destroy my enjoyment of seeing him live. In that case, it was just part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's wrong, because everyone has their own opinion and their own right to however they want to run their band, yep. You know? But it's definitely not my taste. When I go to see a band, I want to see a live performance of musicians getting on a stage and playing, you know? So that's what you get when you get Spread Eagle or any of the other bands I'm in. Yeah. All of them have that same attitude.
Just that whole live without a net, where you don't have that safety net. You're just going out there and you're just giving it your all. I mean, that's what live music should be, really, to me as well.
I agree. And if you do that, you're going to get really good quickly, where you don't need those backing tracks.
Yeah.
You know, you might not have that deep synthesizer patch, you know, that, you know, but there's something else, some other energy that you're portraying up there that makes up for that. You know, you might not have those perfect backing vocals all stacked like a, you know, a chorus, but tucked in soft, that, you know, it just sounds huge. It doesn't sound like a you know, 12 people singing, but there's something else that comes through emotionally that makes up for that and is better than that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I feel. I think it seems like you totally agree.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's unfortunate because I think I'm out of my time slot here. So,
I don't have anyone else set up, but if you have any other questions, you can feel free to ask. If you're done, that's cool too.
No. I mean, I can easily. Lord, we could talk for all afternoon, but
within reason.
Yeah. No, I'm interested because as you're going through and recording the new album, like, I know that with Sound of Speed, like, you and the record company agreed that it was the next thing, or the first single,
without even talking about it, yes.
So now with Grand Scam, was that your choice as well, or was that more of a discussion?
That was their choice. Okay. I love the song. I stand behind every song on the album, but you're just doing your best to think what, first off, it's not just a new record. It's a band that hasn't put out a record in 20 something years. So that's why I thought Sound of Speed would be great first. And they thought the same, because it's just got this energy to it. And Spread Eagle was always about energy. Now, Grand Scam is possibly the song that sounds the most like the old band. So that's, I would guess, why the most like the debut album. I would, you know, it's one of the songs that sound most like it. So I would guess that's why Frontiers picked it. I was thinking, you know, what is something that would just be appealing to a large audience, you know? So I had picked, let me think. I had picked, I think, 29th of February.
Right. And I get, like, I gotta be honest, like, those first three tracks are killer. Like, I love,
thank
like,
you.
when I listen, it's like Subway to the Stars, but then 29th of February, that was, I totally knew that we'd kind of hit it, and then Sound of Speed just kind of wrapped that up. You know, those first three songs are just a great little suite.
I appreciate you saying that, and I agree. I think people will hear the record now. When it hits Sound of Speed, it'll be like, oh yeah, I've heard this song. You know what I mean? Like, because it's the song that people have most likely heard the most off of this record. And so, you know, it might not hit you. I'm imagining it might not hit a person the same way because they've heard it so many times. But after a few months, when you start listening to the album as a whole, and you know all the songs, it'll be apparent that Sound of Speed is perfect third. It just really just starts to kick the record into gear. And so, you know, so that's one of my observations on it. But I appreciate you liking the running order. I struggled with it. You know, I did. I thought that Subway to the Stars was the only song that could start this record. I could be totally wrong, but I came up with about 8 or 9 different running orders. Now we're not talking about singles now of releases.
No,
we're
no.
talking about running order of the album. I came up with about 8 or 9 different ones, and I couldn't see a different song opening the record, and that's because that riff and Ray screaming, you know, in the beginning, it just sounded like the beginning of a story to me, and not, you know, songs weren't arranged because of what we thought was best. They're arranged because of a flow. And that song just said, okay, you're opening a book. This is the first page, and this is how the story starts. And that song said that so much more than any other song. I just couldn't picture a different song going there. And I tried, and it just didn't work for me, you know? So,
yeah.
And I'm glad you like that order, because the first few songs are obviously very important. You know, the sequencing is very important.
Oh, absolutely.
You could easily ruin a record with sequencing.
Yeah, for sure. And it, you know, this is something that really gets me. Like, because I'm a guy who, when I listen to albums, I listen to albums. I do not listen to singles. I listen to entire albums. I'm just, that's the way I'm wired. It's been that way for
nice.
Decades. And so when I listen to a new album, like, especially before an interview, I usually have to go through it twice, because the first time, like, I'm just trying to pick up on like the songs that I like. And then the second time it's kind of like, okay, so now I know which songs kind of stood out to me the first time, but now I want to listen for that, like, for how cohesive it is in that flow. Exactly. And so I think that, for me, the second time I listened to this one, Subway to the Stars, I really got that flow much more.
Well, I try. You know, not to ruin anything, but it is, you know, the album is a train ride.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, there's the sound bites, and especially with the beautiful ballad at the end. It really makes me feel like, okay, you've got off at your destination, and you're off into the night, into the New York City night, you know, out of the subway, you know. So for you, someone who listens to albums completely all the way through, which is rare, I think it would be more, even better experience, you know, because that was my plan of, you know, hopefully people will hear this as a complete piece and listen to it all the way through, and then they'll hear the journey will make sense, you know?
Yeah, because Solitaire, I don't think Solitaire would have fit if you'd tried to slot that in the middle.
Well, you know, it's hard to say,
Yeah.
because there's plenty of records from back in the day that had a ballad, and it wouldn't usually be at the end. However,
No.
there are ba albums that do have ballads at the end. And my main inspiration while writing this album was Aerosmith, 70s Aerosmith. I know our record doesn't sound anything like Aerosmith, but regardless, that was my pep talk or whatever. I would listen to Aerosmith every day, and then I'd sit down to write, you know. And my favorite records by Aerosmith are Rocks and Toys in the Attic, and both of those albums do end with a ballad. And Aerosmith kind of created that. I know Zeppelin had ballads, you know, all the time, but Aerosmith kind of created that template of you write a heavy record and you show that these rockers have a sensitive side, you know? And in the 80s, when bands like, you know, Guns N' Roses and Cinderella were being, you know, some of their, and Spread Eagle, some of their, one of their biggest influences were Aerosmith. And, you know, so it became a formula where you write the one ballad, you know, you show that you're rockers, but you show that you're sensitive, have a sensitive side too.
Yeah.
So my long-winded point is, I don't think every one of those bands, especially in the 80s, put their ballad last.
No.
So I don't know if maybe with this particular group of songs, you might be right. Maybe it wouldn't have worked. And that's a very interesting observation, but that it wouldn't have worked anywhere else. But between listening to Aerosmith and knowing it can work, and just seeing this journey on the subway train, you know, and how could it end, you know, it just made perfect sense. So I'm glad you enjoy it.
Well, and you wouldn't have been able to release things this way, you know, on your first or second album, because Solitaire would have probably been the third song, and then it probably would have been, you know, maybe not the first single, but it probably would have been the second single, just to try to capitalize on the ballad phase.
Well, I stand behind all 11 songs on the record. So if Frontiers chose any song to be a single, I would be fine with that. But yes, the order of release would be something I would want to have an opinion in. Of course, you don't want to come, as you said, you don't want to come out with a ballad for your first song. Probably not even smart to come out with it on your second song. But, you know, if Frontiers chose to release any song, including the ballad, later on, that's fine with me because I believe in it, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but definitely after you've established that this is a rock album, you know.
It's just the difference between like the way things were in the 90s and the way
Yeah, I
things are
understand.
now,
I
for
agree.
sure.
I
Yeah.
agree. Yeah. Yeah,
But
everything was setting up for that big commercial song and that big ballad, you know.
yeah.
Everything was a setup to those two songs.
So then how does that change your mindset now that you know that you really don't have to do that? Like, does that change your mindset when you're writing and recording? Do you feel
No, I
more free or?
no, because I was never making decisions about what kind of song I should write in a time where those decisions would have had any control on things. In other words, the first album, we were just kids and we were just trying to kick as much ass as possible. The second album, Ray and Paul's sort of started to become more. Paul definitely took a lot more control of the second album. And then this album, as you said, I don't have to think, you know, I don't have to think like that, and I don't think like that. So luckily, I was never, what I'm trying to say is, luckily, I was never in a meeting where someone was saying, you have to write a hit song, dude. You know, like we want to break you, but you got to help yourself, you know. You got to write a hit song. Listen to this band song. Listen to this ballad. Listen to this, you know. Or maybe it wasn't, maybe not even in a meeting with a label saying that. I was never in a conversation with someone, you know, saying, you know, telling me I had to write a certain kind of song, you know. And that's unluckily. Maybe other people were, but I'm just speaking for myself.
No, and that's cool. What have you learned then from working with other artists over the past, you know, 20 years, like working with Sebastian Bach, working with UFO, stuff like that? that you're bringing to the table now?
I think songs and energy are the main things that touch people. I mean, you know, when UFO plays Love to Love, you know, the audience is just so appreciative to share that moment, because that's such a legendary song. Same with, like, you know, 18 in Life, you know. So, and energy, of course, is very important. And also, as I've mentioned, don't use backing tracks. That's what I've learned, because it's just a big mistake in the that the industry is making. And they will realize it at some point. And everyone who's, a lot of people will suffer, because when the world realizes how big a mistake it is.
Well, and they're just taking so much shit for it, right? I mean, when you look at Kiss doing it with Paul Stanley and stuff like that, like, the backlash is so enormous for doing.
Well, the backlash is just starting, because people who are informed, like you and I, we know about it, and some people who are very informed have just learned about it in the last couple of years. But that kid who has no idea of this stuff, he doesn't quite know about it yet. But give it another couple of years, everyone's going to know what's going on. And that's when the backlash will be severe, because it'll be a true cultural choice of, is this what we want in our live music? And I think the obvious answer will be no. And that's when everyone who had done it, where it's become a staple of their sound, it'll be too late for them to go back. So I think the reckoning is coming.
Yeah.
And if I'm wrong, that's fine. But I am who I am, and I'm always going to be who I am. But I make my living playing live, you know, especially for the last 14 years nonstop. So I think I kind of do have a really informed opinion on certain things about live music. And when it happens, it's going to be severe.
Well, and it's, I almost feel like it harkens back to the idea of when movies went from being silent to being talkies, where it's like there's people who just don't understand how to do it, and they're going to totally fade away into obscurity because they can't make that leap to actually doing it themselves.
You should write a movie about that and include a little dog.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie The Artist?
Yes.
Okay. Isn't that a fantastic movie?
It is. It is very much
I just
so.
Saw it in the last few months on a plane. I hadn't seen it in years since it came out. I love that movie. But yeah, that's a perfect example. That guy just couldn't grasp change. And I agree with you.
I'll make The Artist for music. That's what I'll
Yeah. Starring Spread Eagle.
Sweet. Excellent. I'm loving this idea even more and more. Well, Rob, I do thank you for your time so much. You know, it's lovely that we were able to spend a little extra time. So I want you to be able to tell all the fans out there. So we know August 9th is the release of Subway to the Stars from Frontiers. So tell the fans where they can find you.
Well, we're in all the obvious spots. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on YouTube, we're on Spotify. Just look. We're easy to find. I guess just Google search Spread Eagle Band or Spread Eagle NYC, and we have sites in different countries, like, you know, Spread Eagle Brazil on Facebook, Spread Eagle Australia, you know, etc. So we're easy to find if you want to find us. And please pick up the record. We have also have autograph copies available, a limited number at Frontier's web store. We're really excited for it. I'm really proud of it. We totally stand behind this record. So we hope everyone else likes it as much as we do.
Well, I know I'm going to listen to it again probably in a couple of days, just to see again how much more shakes down. But I really appreciate. I'm glad you're back. If nothing else,
thank you so much.
I'm so glad.
Thank you.
Because I again you even
the world needs Spread Eagle.
That's for sure.
The world needs Spread Eagle. We were, you know, we were kind of like some bands, but we were our own thing, you know, and it's really needed. You know, that's that you know, every band that says something that is their own needs to be out there, you know.
Bringing that little bit of the edge, that street to the music scene, that's great stuff. But I mean, I know when we started this show doing, you know, talking to musicians, like one of the bands that was on our list was Spread Eagle, and it was just like, well, how are we going to find you guys? And thankfully we were able to find you now. So it all worked out.
We hope to play up there in Calgary. We really do.
I think that would be awesome. Otherwise, we'll just have to travel and find a way to come see you.
Okay, cool.
But Rob, good luck with all of your press that you're doing. I thank you so much for coming on the show, and I wish you nothing but the best for Subway to the Stars. It's an excellent album, and you know, say hello to the rest of the band. We're big fans of Ray as well, so you know, all the best to you.
Thank you so much for listening, and I'm glad you like it. You have a great day. I appreciate your time, man.
Oh, you too.
And all the support, all the years of support. Thank you.
Oh, you know it. Rob DeLuca, all the best, and good luck to you in the future.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye now.